Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsok for another edition of Star Wars Ranked. Me and a guest ranking things in Star Wars, and this is one of those episodes in which we look ahead to something coming down the Star Wars highway, and we take our hopes and we put them down on digital virtual paper and then put it onto a podcast. This is our hopes for The Mandalorian Season 2. Me and Joseph Scrimshaw, sir, welcome to the virtual war room of predictions.
I am happy to be here. This was an incredibly joyful one to think about.
It was, and I say predictions, but really, that's something I'm just not good at. And, you know, over the last few years, Joseph, predictions and taking big swipes and sweeping guesses at what will be in Star Wars stories to come is fun. And it's a lot of fun. And I love doing it. But it also can, we've talked about where it can lead you. We that hashtag speculate responsibly is something we really believe in here at Force Center. It's a t-shirt, for God's sakes. Joseph, I just want to start this before we look ahead to Mandalorian Season 2. Where are you at right now? And 5 years into you and I talking about Star Wars, where are you at with like predictions versus hopes and the murky waters that connect them?
Yeah, I think for me, I like making predictions. And I think on Force Center, we've had a decent record of making predictions that are like about big picture emotional things, like what's going to be at stake for this character in the next part of their journey, or, you know, based on the trailer, what different sort of Star Wars theme does it seem like we're really going to be focusing on? Kind of big picture emotional things I kind of like predicting about, because it really is looking at like, well, where has Star Wars gone before? What does Star Wars character, what does Star Wars care about? What do specific characters care about? So I think I have fun predicting sometimes the what, but I think where it gets into the weeds is the how, or the details, or how these two moments are going to connect. That's the kind of stuff where it's kind of fun to predict, but I'm also really happy to be surprised. Like, we'll go back to The Mandalorian. Obviously, the first season, nobody knew about the child. We had heard rumblings that there's something about this that nobody knows about that is going to make it entirely different than everybody thinks. But like right after that first trailer, I was really invested, and you and I had a great conversation and thought about like, ooh, this looks like it's really going to be about the Mandalorian's relationship with what it means to be a Mandalorian and having the Beskar thrown in his face by the client. And so like on one side, yeah, that's his journey. What does it mean to be a Mandalorian right now in this state of the galaxy? But the how of it, no idea. And delighted to be surprised by it. And I think that's kind of the big picture thing of like, I like making big picture predictions, and I want to be surprised by all the details along the way.
Yeah, same. And I only bring this up to start off this Star Wars rank because I've been particularly at times grumpy 2019 into 2020 of just some kind of the conversations that pop up around fandom. But I always want to clarify, like, I just want to have a lot of fun doing it, and I want all you out there doing that too. And sometimes it is very specific of what we think will happen or what we want to happen. We say hopes, and we're going in a lot of different directions in this conversation. And I love going back and listening to some early Force Center episodes, or the time you and I and Jennifer have done this about Solo. And sometimes we get so close. Other times we're way off, and I actually enjoy being way off more than I enjoy being close. So that said, we also, I'll say this, we recorded this episode after and released it after the season 2 trailer drop, but it was planned before. It was going to be kind of a week of Mando here, I guess you could say. There is, I don't know if your list was submitted to me before the trailer. I don't know if you've adjusted or anything on that. Mine was done after. Does that mean anything? No, it doesn't mean anything unless you're keeping some score. Joseph's descriptions had no help from those 1 minute and 52 seconds that came.
Yeah, no, there are two things on my list, which were like I said, this was really joyful coming up with this list, because I had kind of just been like, ooh, I want to just go into season 2 wide open. And then I was like, oh, for this list, I'm going to dream of what do I truly want? What do I hope for? Not even predict. What do I want? And a couple of them have some possibilities from the trailer. So yeah, it is important to me that I thought of these before the trailer, because it made the trailer only more joyful, because like, oh, cross that hope off the list because I think we might get it.
I love that. All right. So yeah, as I just submit that for evidence in the courts. I don't know why. All right, let's dive in. Star Wars Rank works like this. If you're new to the show, we have each chosen five things to support the topic, the best of whatever we're ranking today, the hopes for Mandalorian Season 2. We work 5-1. We'll throw some honorable mentions in a little bit later after the break. Joseph, let's begin with your number 5.
My number 5 is something that is both thematic and just one of those timeline things I'm fascinated with. I love that The Mandalorian has been doing lots of tip of the iceberg storytelling, as we say here on Force Center, where it kind of alludes to something and it lets you know what you need to know emotionally for the characters, and it allows you to have fun imagining. But then sometimes I just want to see more of that iceberg. And my number 5 is show me more of the iceberg on this particular issue. And that is clarity on the tragedy of Mandalore. And for me, this is a little different than sometimes every once in a while, like there's a specific detail I want to know just because, you know, we collect lots of information about the timeline. Sometimes that's nice to have a specific detail, but this is much more about like the how and the why of who the Mandalorian is, who the armor is, and that kind of stuff. So just to be a little bit clear on this, obviously we know and now have seen more in season 7 of the Clone Wars of the Republic really brought the hammer down on Mandalore. After the Mandalorians in the Death Watch kind of uprising, you even have that brief conversation of, you know, the clone saying, we do not want to be an occupying police force. We're soldiers. And the like, Mandalore's not going to take this. So we know that at the beginning, as the Republic turned into the Empire, that there was some tragedy on Mandalore. We know that the Empire had a presence and worked with Mandalorians. And then we go to Rebels, right? Which is just a couple of years, getting real close to A New Hope by those later seasons, right? And we know that there was resistance from some of our heroic Mandalorian characters. We know Bo-Katan was holding that darksaber up, right? And what I want to know then is what happens next. Because there's been references on Mandalorian that I think a lot of people think are related to the events right during the change from the Republic to the Empire. But I really get the feeling, the impression that after Bo-Katan is holding that darksaber up at the very, very precipice of the, you know, rebellion against the Empire, that there is some other deeper tragedy. I'm paraphrasing, but in the first season of Mandalorian, they say at one point of like, they, you know, burnt our world, or, you know, I'm paraphrasing again. And I would just love to get some clarity between those two incidents, because I think something even worse happened right at to Mandalore, right at the beginning of the rebellion against the Empire. And I want to know that story.
Yeah, I do too. This is something we've been going into season one, especially after seeing the trailer and everything at Celebration. We're wondering, I think you would agree. We don't ever need any of these answers to have a good story, so we're not saying that in that terms. But this is one that's beyond just curious to me. This affects the characters in the story, especially if, you know, a lot of rumors, and we're going to mention some of these rumors. We're not calling any of them fact today. That should be a key to remember. But, you know, if Bo-Katan shows up in this show, what happened and the loss of the darksaber would affect her, would affect her character's point of view, would affect her journey. And I wouldn't want it to be too much of vague references to, you know, that thing over there.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm not saying I want flashbacks. There might be a book that deals with it, or a comic down the line. You know, we're getting a lot of Mandalorian tie-in books and stuff, whatever. But yeah, I know what you mean. Just some clarity. You use the term clarity. I do want that clarity.
Yeah. Because we've got to see more in season 7 of Clone Wars about what is happening at one point in time. And yeah, to me, there's just something obviously happened that is important to the characters. It's not just fill out the history. But yeah, Bo-Katan lost that darksaber, and that darksaber is in the hands of Moff Gideon. And, you know, Moff Gideon seems to have a real rough relationship with Mandalore. And something happened to drive the covert underground. And I want to think that incident helped frame the way the existing Mandalorians hide, the way the existing Mandalorians think about themselves. It changes the story of Boba Fett, of if during the era of the Civil War, the Mandalorians are just decimated, and he is the Mandalorian to the galaxy, that in effect affects his story. So there's actual like character and storytelling stuff that's affected by it, as well as just being like kind of fun, cool, nerdy Star Wars history. I want to know that chapter of Mandalore.
Love it. That's a great way to start the show. The tragedy of Mandalore. Give us more.
Yeah, more tragedy.
yeah, give us more. Unfortunately, you know, Werner Herzog won't be there to explain it. Unless, you know, we have flashback. So that is the number 5 hope on your list. We'll go to my number 5. It is this, the Heart of Greef Karga. Got a great shot of Carl Weathers as Greef Karga in the trailer. Yep, we see it. Looks good. We know he's directing an episode. To have Greef back is really cool, especially considering the character was supposed to maybe be killed off in season 1, something we learned in the behind the scenes of stuff on the Disney Gallery show. So look, I just love, full disclosure, love Carl Weathers outside of Star Wars. Glad he's in Star Wars. And I'm intrigued to see where that character started. I wouldn't call him a straight up bad guy. He's in an underworld type of position. He starts in a maybe bad place, and along the way, particularly in that journey in episode 7 and 8, starts to see things that change him, start to see things. And he sticks around. He's on Navarro. He sticks around maybe assumes a higher position, and maybe he's still working with bounty hunters, the underworld. I don't know. But I would just love to see that this character takes a step forward, not necessarily in terms of showing up in every episode and being important and being a lead. No, no, I would love that, but not necessarily that. But just that the next time we see this character, his heart has continued that journey forward. It's not just something he learned. He was moved. He was saved. He was going to kill the Mandalorian and the child, but then I didn't do it. But you know what? Bounty hunting's still a good life. Whatever it is, you know, he might still, again, he might still be in the business. The guild might still be going on. I believe there's still bounty hunters, right? But that the heart, his heart is strong and his heart has moved forward. I just love this character so much. I want to see him just have that lair.
Yeah. I think that's great. New beard, new heart, right? That's the story of Greef Karga. No, I love him. I love the little picture that we get that he's really got that attitude of, you know, hey, you know what? Maybe the New Republic is failing. Maybe they should be out here in the farther reaches and they should be helping people and they're not. But I think the picture of the character that I got was he takes that, you know, legitimate concern and he uses it to just go, you know what, the world's, the galaxy is just awful. You know, it's a killer be killed. You know, if you got a problem, what, you're going to take it to the New Republic? That's a joke. They're a joke. So it's fine what I'm doing. It doesn't matter. You know, hey, you know, a job's a job, period.
Yeah.
And kind of hiding in that, it's a different take, but a little bit of that Han Solo vibe of like, I look out for me and that's it. I'm running this thing and it's fine. And then he goes through these transformative experiences. And for him to now not suddenly go, I am a beacon of light, but for him to go, oh, this is kind of a refreshing awakening of maybe I can have more agency. And instead of just seeing myself in as a cog in the machinery of horror that is the galaxy, maybe I can put the guild back together the way I want it to be. And maybe I can have these new ideas that I want them to be. And I think there's still going to be a little bit of a, like, I'm a businessman and hey, sometimes people get shot. I don't think that he's going to be like suddenly, you know, giving classes on Jedi philosophy or anything like that. But I think there's going to be that change of heart. And because he introduced this level of sort of theatricality to the character, I'm really hoping for like, so I'm like, this is the way it is now. You know, I have birthed a new Bounty Hunters Guild and our rules are these. Like, I would love that.
Yes. So on a smaller level, I just want another great, awkwardly perfect grammar delivered, as I deliver it badly, a speech from Greef Karga.
Yeah, absolutely.
My grammar bad, Greef Karga's good. All right, that is my number five, which means we're up to your number four, Hope, for The Mandalorian Season 2.
Yeah, my number four kind of goes along in a way, and it is, I am hopeful to see the tenets of the Mudhorn Clan. I really like the whole storytelling in Mandalorian Season 1. That, you know, that there are these rules to being a bounty hunter, but more importantly, there are these rules of honor to being a Mandalorian. They are being really tested by being a Mandalorian who is, you know, just out in the galaxy getting by. Queel brings that up to Din Djarin of like, but you have this kind of epic past and legacy to live up to, like in your Mando going from like, I don't want to learn to ride that thing to, you rode the Mythosaur. Come on, like, answer your higher calling. And goes through this journey with the child and ends up at that point where the armor kind of gives him the speech, gives him the signet and says, you know, you're a clan of two. The two of you are you know, bonded together. And the way forward for you right now in your clan of two is to find the place that he belongs. And I think kind of hint, hint, and maybe you'll find where you belong. So for the time being where they're, you know, separate from the covert that he was in, he's kind of leveled up as a Mandalorian, that he has his own signet. He has his own clan of two. He's really set up to, you know, reprogram himself the way IG-11 did, that he's open to that idea. And as he's going forward with the child and being a parent, like, it's almost like it's this fun way to say, what are the rules of the house? You know, what are the rules of the Razor Crest? What are the rules of a Mando daddy? But it's also like a part of being a Mandalorian that I would imagine each clan within the honor system of the Mandalorian, within the beliefs of the creed of Mandalorian, what are the individual tenets? What are the things they believe in? And are they going to shape them? Is it going to be anything that's literally spoken of Din Djarin turning to the child and saying, in the Mudhorn Clan, we don't X.
God, I hope so. We don't listen to space pop music. This is great. And this is probably something that's not necessarily, as we're joking, not necessarily going to be expressly stated at times, but maybe. But what happens if this clan expands? Do you see that happening to counter or to expand this thought with you? I'm not necessarily Cara Dune or Greef Karga or anything, but someone else along the way. Would that even make it more important for you to really know what is this clan versus just more members on the team?
Yeah, I think so, because I think that's a little bit of what's at stake in season one of, you know, Mando getting adopted so young and really wanting to walk the way of Mandalore. And seeing that as a contrast between, like, being in a clan, being in a covert is clearly a kind of family, a kind of bond, but he defines that in contrast to the kind of traditional family that is offered to him by Omer, right? Where she wants to take his helmet off and she just wants him to, you know, sit on the porch and drink and watch the sunset while the children play. Like, and he's like, no, that's not who I am. But now he's still a Mandalorian, but he's got this kid. So he's kind of got this idea of, is it possible that a more traditional idea of family could meet with the more traditional idea of what it is to be a Mandalorian, what it is to be a hunter? And now that I let this kid into my life, could I end up adding more people to my life? And suddenly I've got a family, but not in the way I ever expected.
Hmm. That's great. Did you write an episode this year? Because
I wish.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. I like to see where that goes. Okay. Great. Hey. Yeah. That's great. I'm really on board with that one.
Yeah.
Love that idea.
Yeah.
It's my, can I take that as a hope too?
Oh, please.
Can
I agree with all your hopes. So I'll be sharing hopes.
I don't know. All right. My number four hope is this: Cobb Vanth, more than a name, more than a feeling. Yeah, here it is. So let's directly address a rumor that could be a potential spoiler. If you're afraid of that, you want to go in completely blind, I understand. Absolutely. There's already been some freeze framing. And I do enjoy a good freeze frame, folks. I do enjoy a good freeze frame. Please keep sending me them. I actually enjoy them. I just don't want to base all my enjoyment on them, what they could end up being. But so there is the rumor Timothy Oliphant was cast. And then there's a rumor that his character will be in the Boba Fett armor, but not necessarily Boba Fett. And of course, that directly leads to this character of Cobb Vanth, the self-titled sheriff of Freetown on Tatooine. So I hope, just as much as people are hoping that ice planet in the trailers, Ilum and all that kind of stuff, and I kind of hope so too, I really, really do want to see Cobb Vanth in this series. I think there's a place for the character, but I want it to be more than just a name, Joseph. I don't want it to just be, you know, Timothy Oliphant is doing his Deadwood character in space, which, by the way, is, you know, great show, great character. But and that's it. And it's interesting because Favreau, we can joke, you know, I saw the joke going around Twitter of like almost you almost expect Favreau to be like, hey, we got Gamorrean guards fighting, right? Deep cut reference Gamorrean guards, right? I saw some poking of that. But you got Filoni there. But this is neither of them, neither of their storytelling creation. This is Chuck Wendig from Aftermath. You know, when Wendig's not involved, he's even tweeted out when the rumors were going, I have no idea. I wrote some books and I'm done with it. Like, I got nothing on you. I got nothing, kids. I'm watching with you. So if they're going to pull it, if there's a, hey, we got this character floating around and it might work, I really want it to matter. I think Cobb Vanth is a pretty interesting character. It's not super fleshed out. It is a, you know, it is an interlude character, but I like the stuff going on there. It is a former slave who does not want to see Tatooine fall under the control of companies, businesses and gangsters and organizations that will do ill will to the people there. I think there's a good thing there, and I want to know how and why it would factor in. If you're going to use him, give me a big why. And I don't know if this is a hope, is more if it's a threat for me. I don't know. No, and I'll be happy either way. And again, Timothy Oliphant could be, you know, another insert other name in the Boba Fett army, and Cobb Vanth is not mentioned at all. We all have to kind of be braced for that. I am all for the connections that matter. And I do want this one to matter. And if they use it right, I'll be open to how. I just want that why. And that's kind of all I got for it. I don't have anything specific. I'm directly hearing those rumors and part of me getting excited, but tempering my excitement so I'm not disappointed. I think it's an interesting story. I wouldn't want it just to be a passing reference in the night.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one that is both the Timothy Oliphant is going to be Cobb Vanth, this, you know, relatively obscure character from mm-hmm. a series of books that are, you know, greatly debated among fans. You know, you and I really like all the ideas in those books, and a lot of characters mm-hmm. continue to resonate from those books. But they're books that a lot of people have strong feelings about, obscure character. Yep, for sure, that's who Timothy Oliphant is going to play. So on one hand, it's like, this is wild. On the other hand, it's like, well, when every sound is in harmony with itself, how can we doubt it? Like, Timothy yeah. Oliphant is perfect casting for the character.
Yeah.
And the reason that it doesn't feel wild and out there to me is if all of the other rumors are true of Temuera Morrison coming back and possibly playing Boba Fett. This is one of those things where, to me, it's important to think about how the creators go about creating. I don't think there's any moment where John Favreau is walking in to the Lucas Story Group and saying, could you please give me a rundown of all the however many hundreds of new characters and ideas the publishing side has created since 2014, 2015. I think this is one of those, hey, I want to tell Boba Fett, you know, what happened with him in modern canon, like, and or even Filoni saying, like, okay, but we got this kind of thing where we have an implication that somebody else took his armor and we haven't really decided where Boba Fett is. So we could tell that story where Boba Fett is. We're playing with these ideas for the movies, and there's this Cobb Vanth. And then who's the character of Cobb Vanth? I can imagine a world where they break it down. Cobb Vanth is his character. We don't know much about him. We know that he was a slave. We know that there was an utter power vacuum when Jabba's operation was destroyed. There was a concern that a bunch of different criminals would just overrun Tatooine and everyone would suffer as they fight for control and resources. And here's a guy who took this armor he found and wore it like an old West sheriff to try to help people. And you just say that to somebody like John Favreau, he's responding to the idea. He's not responding in my imagination of this scenario to, here's this little bit of canon you have to include it if you're talking about Boba Fett. Here's this little, you know, obscure Star Wars reference. He would respond to the idea of Cobb Vanth. The idea of Cobb Vanth lines up perfectly with what's being dealt with in The Mandalorian. So that's what makes it feel to me like it's not that bonkers to think it's possible.
Yeah, I like. Yeah, thank you. I think I need to hear some of the stuff you said. This isn't like one of my super super favorite characters that I must have something. You know, I just really like the idea. I like Western kind of motifs and themes. Anyways, again, mentioning Deadwood, a damn fine show. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy Oliphant's work in that. Mm-hmm. But it would, it does kind of line up. And I think going into season one, there was even some thoughts of like, well, you know, this character exists, but it just, you know, I didn't know how it would matter, but it does seem like it would fit. It does seem like thematically there'd be something there that could help the show or you know, just add to the show more than help is what I should say. And so it's good. Yeah. And look, I love the show. I even was texting Alex Damon over Star Wars Explained today, just like, I imagine this conversation's going on. Dave Filoni's like, oh, that's great. Everyone thinks that planet's Ilum. And Favreau's like, what's Ilum? you know, jokes aside, but yeah, and he's not walking into a room. Matt Martin, what you got? It's not happening. It's just not. But the themes can lead to these things, much like Saw Gerrera, the use of Saw Gerrera in Rogue One was a case of that, of, well, we got this, and it lines up. So, all right, cool. It's a hope. It's a hope. It's a strong hope.
Yeah.
That's my number four.
Yeah, and I think, it is just one of those things where lots of cool, hey, a character from a smaller part of Star Wars became a part of bigger Star Wars is often because it could be that somebody like Favreau said, hey, I want to do a small town sheriff on Tatooine, and the story group's like, we got one, here you go. Yeah. It could be as simple as that, too. that the idea was already there. And like, yeah, no, he already exists. Here you go. Like that to me is the, like the purest and often stated purpose of the story group.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So that is my number four, which means we are up to your number three.
My number three, I'm going to flip them around a little bit because we're already on this track and I want to stay on that track. So my number three, this is definitely getting into far from prediction and into hope. And I packed a bunch of different hopes into one thing. Here it is.
You did.
Number three is Boba Fett wrestles with his legacy as both a clone and an alleged Mandalorian while on a visit to the ruins of Kamino.
So, sometimes Star Wars Rank, we completely surprise each other. Lately, we've been making sure we don't step on each other's thoughts and toes and everything. I read this, and I read it exactly. You read it, sir. I was like, Boba Fett wrestles. Oh, this is great. Legacy of the Clone. Oh, yeah. As an alleged Mandalorian, definitely. Want to visit to the ruins of Kamino. I was like, holy, whoa. Yeah, okay. Keep going there. Love that idea.
All right. You know the image on that gets shared on Twitter of the person explaining the conspiracy theory with the frizzled hair and the strings between everything? That's how I feel right now. If the rumors are true that Boba Fett is back, if Temuera Morrison is back, you know, there's been a discussion of like and rumors back and forth. Is he Boba Fett? Is he Rex? Is he both? I'd be happy with both. There's always the discussion of, you know, people of my age who grew up with the original trilogy have this love of Boba Fett as this man of mystery. A lot of people come to him later. It's like he says and does next to nothing and then, you know, appears to die in a cruelly embarrassing way. Get it. And the reason that I always continue to be excited for Boba Fett is I think there's so much to explore in the fact that he is a clone, very different than the other clones, and yet he still is a clone, and we don't ever really know too much about how he felt about that. We know that he has this, you know, sense of vengeance towards the Jedi and another character who is defined by the loss of a parental figure. So there's a lot, I think, in the character to talk about. But now in the context of The Mandalorian, even the way Favreau originally put out the ad on his Instagram for it, he talks about, well, there is Jango, there was Boba, but now we got a new Mandalorian. And there's always been this floating, like, well, in the Clone Wars, Almec says Jango isn't a Mandalorian. He just stole the armor. And you're like, well, what does that mean for Boba Fett? So there's that really interesting thread to pull on. And in the first season of Mandalorian, so well established that the Mandalorians are a rare sighting. Mm-hmm. And if Boba Fett was holding that mantle while being kind of well known across the galaxy, is the deadliest, most fearsome bounty hunter, and that was the face of what a Mandalorian is for several years, I would imagine other Mandalorians have opinions about that. And to have him confront that and to kind of get that canon information of, out of all the things that make up Boba Fett's identity, the loss of Jango, the fact that he is a clone, the fact that he is seen as in the galaxy as the Mandalorian and how he defines for himself a Mandalorian, all that stuff is juicy and interesting. It's why I still care about Boba Fett. And this show feels perfectly primed to actually deal with those things. Since this show is called The Mandalorian, since it's a possibility that Rex might show up and Rex might sure have some opinions about how Boba Fett has not done right by being a clone. Din Djarin might have some opinions about how Boba Fett has not done right by being the Mandalorian. And then to get to the largest, farthest away string on my conspiracy board of Kamino, we saw that Kamino patch on Dr. Pershing. There is ample reason to suspect that there's a desire to clone either the child or clone, you know, his blood, you know, to use in experiments and to give force powers to other people or power a weird Sith force machine or whatever they want with it. There is a connection to cloning. I think there is a good possibility that the Empire, you know, just took care of Kamino the same way they took care of Geonosis. So then you even got some combinations of that relates to whatever the Empire did to Mandalore. So, man, if there is some, it sounds absurd, but then it actually does bundle all these ideas together. If for some reason Mando needed to go to Kamino to track down what was actually happening, what the actual threat to the child was, and he encounters Boba Fett living in his childhood home in some ruins on a devastated planet, it's not that far-fetched. Again, it's not a prediction. I'm not saying episode four, it's going to be Kamino. This is where it gets back to hopes. I like all these ideas, and I have this hope that maybe some element of them could pop up because they actually make thematic sense in what's at stake for the story and the characters.
Yeah, when some of the rumors and stuff started dropping, I remember we did have some discussions on the Force Center main show about this, and we kind of went to a similar spot of imagine what you could actually really do with Boba Fett versus just him jingle jangly spur showing up and being a thorn in the side or some action reason. And I'd love to see some action with Boba Fett, but yeah, you could really do something great with this character showing up, really deal with some stuff. And what a fun, I don't know, irony that Favreau's like, can I do a Boba Fett series? No. Okay, I'll come up with this character. Can I do Boba Fett now? Yeah. But you know what you got to do? You got to really deal with what happened to him in the prequels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fascinating too, because I will always think, even you know, from Favreau talking about his Boba Fett socks to sometimes early on in press slipping and calling the Mandalorian Boba Fett, that this Mandalorian series is totally reclaiming the mysterious mystique that people used to love about Boba Fett. So what would he want to return that mystique to Boba Fett in some way, or would he be more interested in dealing with some of the prequel stuff, or probably a mix, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, you know, and what's interesting in talking about the tragedy of Mandalore too, when you think timeline wise, going back to 1980 or, you know, 78, when Boba Fett walks in a parade for the first time in the holiday special, all that stuff. And it's a, you know, an ancient a character that's from an ancient group of warriors and all that kind of, you know, myth stuff gets put in the character. And George doesn't know that this is going to go on and da, 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 da. But now here we are. This second tragedy of Mandalore, you know, counting some of the other stuff that happens in the Clone Wars and stuff we know about, the one that we don't know about, this happens within a couple years, we got to assume, of Boba Fett tooling around the galaxy as the best bounty hunter around.
Yeah.
And what you said earlier about him kind of being a representation for, whether he is or not, for Mandalorians to the galaxy. When you meet him, you're like, oh, that's a Mandalorian. Whether, you know, he's wearing the armor or not doesn't factor into your reaction to him in galaxy. But it's not too far from the actual, perhaps, final fall of Mandalore, right?
Yeah.
And that would actually be something he has to know about, hear about, or deal with. And if you deal with that in any way, shape, or form, you know, is could he be accused of, you know, some sort of stolen valor? You're walking around saying this, and we're the ones who wouldn't sacrifice. We're the ones who lost, and does he deal with that? Does he feel guilty about that? The Kamino thing's great, because I imagine him untucked shirt, drinking some space wine.
Yep.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Is it Mandy Patinkin and Princess Bride and Andre the Giant has to dunk Boba Fett's head in water to get him better? here, we're going to get you going again. It's potentially really good. It's potentially really powerful and add some new layers, wrinkles, and context to a character that, you're right, has over the years people go, you know, Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And I'm like that too.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I mean, you shouldn't leave this part of the conversation without saying Temuera Morrison is one of, I think, the best actors in the prequels. I think just a phenomenal actor with just such a great gravitas and can express so much within also being kind of like a cool, doesn't say much guy. So, honestly, when you're talking about hopes to meet a kind of broken down, just sipping space whiskey, feeling sorry for himself without his armor, even because Cobb Vanth has it, Boba Fett. And that's the way we meet him. And then I will predict, if the rumors are true and Boba Fett is back, one of the things I think Jon Favreau absolutely will do will go, oh, hey, kids, you think Boba Fett isn't cool? I'm going to show you the most devastatingly cool Boba Fett action, so I never have to hear Boba Fett isn't cool again.
There you go. Look, and if he redons the armor, having great purpose behind it now, could be very powerful. Or he shows up and he's smoky cool and he does cool things and cool and we all go cool and the story moves on. I don't know. But anyways, I'm with you. That's a great hope.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting me lay out my entire string-connected conspiracy Boba Fett theory.
No, it's all great. It's all great. So that is your number three. We're going to my number three. All right. Here it is, folks. This is a long title. It's the title of a novel that will never get written. Exploring the Shattered Remnants of the Empire. The who, what's, and whys of what is left. All right. Here's what I got. So I really love Moff Gideon. I think it's kind of not great dialogue, quite frankly, but I do love this is an E-Web repeating blaster, as I'm reading from a Sears catalog in 1980. I just love it. And Giancarlo Esposito is a great actor. And I just love everything about it. And the reveal of the Darksaber just absolutely was a big giant ooh. And I love oohs in my Star Wars. But going back to that interview where they touched before season one of, oh, we're going to kind of give you some of the answers about the origins of the First Order. And that was never to be taken literal. Now we could get a little bit more of the literal stuff. Mm-hmm. There could be a little more with there. I'm not expecting some kind of big speech. We are 5 years or so after. 16, 18 months? The timeline's rough. We inside, you know, around year and a half, 2 years, following the Battle of Endor is the Jakku stuff. That is when Rey Sloane and everyone, boom, off to the unknown region. So if we're about 3 years after that, totally realistic that there's still pockets of resistance, that there's still people believing in the Empire, that there's still people using the armor and the gear and the techniques and the tactics of the Empire for their own causes and seeing the vacuum of power. And I think Moff Gideon slides into that. So I don't want simple Rick Olier exposition of here's all the players on the board of the Empire, but I would love to know and have it dealt with, especially if Gideon's got a Star Destroyer or, you know, a bunch of, you know, the fact he was able to call reinforcements to Navarro and does have this gear, you know, what's he got and what's he want this for? What's he believe in this thing that he's putting out there that Esposito's putting out there in interviews of like, What if I offer something to Mandalorian? What if I have some sort of traditional classic Star Wars temptation to the dark side type of thing? How that would attach itself to just the Empire right now. And do they know? Because I've always said the stormtroopers of Navarro totally look like the crew that would be left behind. Like, oh, we got launched on the rocket into the sun. Everyone else got to go to planet Earth 2. Like, damn it. They've got to be aware of that. And are they proud to be there? Have they spun it around to be like, no, we're good. We're glad we got left behind. Unknown regions. Rey Sloane was an idiot. We're here and we're glad. And again, I'm not predicting that the name Rey Sloane we mentioned though, please, I'd love it. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that makes perfect sense, Joseph, but I just, a little bit of the imperial state of the galaxy right now, more than just this guy with a TIE fighter and a darksaber.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And again, this is something that maybe could sound like, here's a bunch of exposition we want, or, you know, here's a Wikipedia entry we want about the state of the galaxy. But I think it isn't that, because it flows logically from who is this character? What does he want? What does he believe? Because we've been introduced to different ideas that different Imperial remnants have about, well, I'm just going to keep going to keep my squad alive. Or we know the First Order part of it of like, let's have a rebirth and let's go off into the unknown regions. We know the people who think like the Empire was good because it maintained order. This weird dark sorcerer crap, don't want anything to do with that. And then we know some people who are like, you know, it's really all about the dark sorcery. That's the good part. So we know lots of different perspectives. So it's great to ask, what is Moff Gideon's? What is his actual goal? Does he just want to take over a territory? Is he himself just personally obsessed maniacally with power? Does he have a vision of rebuilding the Empire? Does he know about the First Order and wants to go to the unknown regions and take over that burgeoning bit of the Empire? What? Obviously, it seems to me, big picture, they want the child for its power in some way, but to what end? Is that for Moff Gideon himself? Is that tied to Exegol in some way? Is that tied to some other thing that we haven't heard of or talked about? All those are really interesting questions that will reveal the character of Moff Gideon, reveal the stakes of what the Mandalorian is actually fighting against, and along the way, tell us more about the state of the Empire.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
The other thing that I have meant to talk to you about, which I'm just so entertained about, because you always mention in such a fun, good-humored way that great speech about the Eweb heavy repeating blaster that is basically a entirely creepy Wikipedia entry that Giancarlo Esposito is the only actor who got nominated for an Emmy. Uh-huh. He got nominated for an Emmy for reading a Wikipedia entry about a blaster, and that means he's a damn good actor.
Yes. Yeah, no, that whole thing, and unveiling that his knowledge he has about everyone there and running through, and it's exposition. It's episode 8, learning who, hey, these characters just met. Here's who they are. They've hinted at some of this stuff, but here's who they are. No, I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and it was chilling in its own way. It's a different kind of villain. Speaking softer, sometimes a little more freaky than a bunch of screaming, right? So,
yeah.
Can we get with that? This is a super Star Destroyer. I found it in 2-watt drive yards. give me more of that. All right, so that is my number 3. Give me the story, the Empire, how it all matters, and what does Moff Gideon want? We are now at your number 2.
My number 2 is one of the ones that I almost changed after having seen the trailer and decided, you know what, hell, I'm keeping it. My number 2 is Experience the Might of the New Republic. This is something that I have banged on about a lot if you're a regular listener to Force Center. But I really do love the idea of the complexity of this situation of, hey, the Empire was clearly bad. They were clearly devastating planets, clearly totally ravaging and ruining people's lives. The New Republic has the greatest of intentions to try to take over, but it is hard to keep order over the whole galaxy and, you know, police everything without also being overly controlling and also with having like, hey, we need to have enough of a fleet to protect people. But, you know, if we show the galaxy a fist, they'll show us a fist back. So we don't want to have a huge army, says Mon Mothma. And I feel like the Mandalorian's in such a great place to wrestle with that. And I love what was shown in the first season of, oh, if you got a legal problem, you could take it to the New Republic, like they're a joke. But then when the New Republic actually does show up, everybody's like, oh, no. And they just take care of business immediately. And they're actually terrified of them. So I was really hoping to see more of not just the might of the New Republic, not just more of what we saw in chapter 6 of season 1 of like, no, when the X-Wings show up, everybody is frightened because the New Republic does have might in this era, but also just some of the sort of philosophical or moral might of like, yep, they are not everywhere and they are definitely failing people in their power vacuums that they aren't doing enough about. But seeing a little bit of that other side of like, but if you go closer into, you know, the interior, they're creating a better galaxy for right now. So I was excited to see both the physical or philosophical might of the New Republic. And man, those shots of X-Wings come alongside the Razor Crest and opening their S-foils. Yeah, definitely going to see the might. Now I maybe want to see the moral might. And in just wild, wild hopes and dreams. You know, it would be great to see or hear like a hollow of Mon Mothma, to encounter a therapy Ewok or my dream of dreams to see the character also from Aftermath, Sinjarath Velis, you know, somebody who used to be an Imperial, somebody who is definitely like gritty and honest about how horrific the world can be, but kind of found this calling to work with the New Republic and kind of try to have some hope and optimism. And like, that's an interesting character to pop up and represent the New Republic. Definitely not listing that one as a prediction. I don't think half the characters of Aftermath are going to show up in this one season of The Mandalorian. So that one's more of a sub hope under Experience the Might of the New Republic.
Yeah, this is not just great, but this is potentially important as the story goes on, not just this season, but if we go beyond. This was pitched as, hey, on the far reaches of the galaxy, this Western vibe, the Mandalorians out there, you know, between the dust and the glory of the galaxy. And then we get, you know, the New Republic shows up, like you said, the director squad shows up. But with Moff Gideon going around, realistically, with the tools that he has, the New Republic knows, the New Republic is aware. If we got a novel series, the Alphabet Squadron, if we got a video game coming out that is, yes, closer to the events of Battle of Endor before the, you know, the fall, the official fall, the Galactic Concordance and the Battle of Jakku and all that stuff. Yes, I get that. But if they've got, they're still fighting that war, even if now, if someone's walking around with TIE fighters, stormtroopers, speeder bikes, and maybe potentially a walker or a Star Destroyer or something bigger. If the New Republic doesn't deal with that in some way, story-wise, I would absolutely be going, huh?
Yeah.
At some point, this does have to become big enough or just big enough to be on their radar screen. And could we be getting that? That shot, S-foil's locked in attack position, flying through the clouds, all that kind of stuff. I can't imagine. Yeah, I can believe it's small enough, right? Same with the X-Wings in episode 6 to see you blowing up the basic. Yeah, it's a small little thing, right? Just a day in a life, right? Some point, if Moff Gideon, I can't say it's a prediction, just like you're saying, but like at some point, a paper's going to come across the desk of Leia. Hey, someone's got a Star Destroyer out there.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to deal with that. So yeah, so moving towards that, I don't think it will happen this year, but to move towards that, I would want that to be part of the story.
Yeah, and maybe even that story of, like, it is more of a criticism of the New Republic. Like, yeah, Leia is definitely like, no, we have to deal with that. But are there other people in the government going, we can send two X-Wings?
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Very interesting. That's my number two, yeah.
And I do like that you slipped in a therapy Ewok. I think we do need that. So it's a great number two. Yeah, I would love if Singer showed up as well and some other storytelling. Here, probably not, but down the line somewhere else, maybe. Great number two. We're up to my number two. After that, we'll take a quick break, come back with some honorable mentions and our number one choice for our hopes in Mandalorian Season 2. But my number two is this. Hear me out, folks. The child's first words.
Yeah.
All right, so here's where this thought came about. This, I will say, wasn't from like the trailer, but me watching the trailer. Two different things. If you follow me here, I was watching it again even after you and I recorded our breakdown and discussion over it, and I just was just so warm. My heart's just warm seeing the Baby Yoda stuff, right? And the gifts going around, and the pictures, and the new rent, and the amount of Baby Yoda merchandise we're gonna have even more. But I thought, look. Like every sitcom in history, that cute kid's got to grow up. It's gonna move. The show goes on. We're going to have teen Yoda, and people have made those jokes before too. I'm not being super original here. I get it. So at some point, what's that first word? Is this going to be like Maggie Simpson? Can we get the ghost of Elizabeth Taylor I don't know. Respect Elizabeth Taylor. I would love to see it, Joseph. I would love to see it. It doesn't have to be some big giant moment of reveal. And the first word could be daddy. I don't know. I don't care. I just would like to see it. It would be a real sweet moment, but potentially a really important moment. And also slowly brace us all for the move forward for the growth and maturation of the child.
Yeah. Yeah. When he looks up at his daddy and says, E-Web heavy repeating blaster. That's his first words.
That's what it is. Don't say it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely great. I think it is just sort of, I think it's a pretty good prediction as well as a hope that it's just kind of pitch perfect for the way the child has been handled. Is there is that element of deep sentimentality and deep comedy with this cute little relatable guy taking his first little wobbles into the world, but even from that great funny shot in the trailer of him closing the pram because the whistling birds and the daddy violence is coming, that he is growing, right? He is becoming more, less intuitive and more aware of his environment and extremely reactive to it, that it only follows that we might get some little bit of development. And, you know, if it's handled right, a first word is either going to be an affirmation of the direction of the Mudhorn clan, or it's going to be the realization of a problem.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Insightful. Yeah. A lot of people reacting to the child on that snowy planet and on that close up shot. We even used in our thumbnail for the YouTube video of just like, there seems to be some sort of realization or some kind of recognition, which is a great thing to take when you say, just some, you know, there's something in his face that says he's aware of something potentially. And that's a freeze frame kind of analysis, but that made me think too, of just like, to your point too, excellent. He knows. He's not just floating around the galaxy unaware of things. He knows stuff. He feels things. He's growing. He's 50, but he's a baby, and he's not going to be forever. So we're going to have to deal with it. I'd love to see it here in season two.
That's right. He turns 51 and all bets are off.
All bets are off. Ain't so cute anymore, huh, kid? Huh? All right, there we go. We're going to take a quick break. And after that, we're going to talk about our honorable mentions and our number one hopes for Mandalorian season two here on Force. This is Star Wars Rant. See you in a bit.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget, Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out. Welcome back to Star Wars Ranked, the 98th edition of this ongoing series. Here on Force Center, Joseph Scrimshaw and I are here looking ahead to Mandalorian Season 2 and our hopes. We have a fun list going, some deep discussions when maybe even, I don't know, Joseph, I was like, could there be deep discussions had in the child's first words? And yet you better believe there, you know?
Absolutely.
So we always have some things that don't quite make the list. Honorable mentions. I want to get to them here. I definitely know I don't have as much as you. And I'll say this, Joseph, off air, you and I were discussing it too. I think it's worth an on air discussion of you and I sometimes looking ahead. We just feel a little out of rhythm with it right now. And we have a balance with you and we just want to sit back and enjoy, but also having this extreme level of excitement for what's coming. And I know a lot of listeners are in that same spot. So it's been fun for you and I, Joseph, to really kind of go, all right, now let's look ahead to the Star Wars stories and themes we want to explore and keep in that high energy, positive way of living as a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me that, you know, going into the first season of Mandalorian, not knowing a lot, not knowing the, you know, incredibly key thing that this was going to be a relationship about him and this baby Yoda, the child, was so great. And I think people responded to the first season with just such open hearts and open minds that a part of me was like, I just don't want to speculate at all about season two. I just want to watch it. But then as soon as we discussed having this topic, and I took some time to just open my mind, all these ideas just flooded in because I liked the first season so much and I'm so excited for the second season. So I am feeling really enthusiastic and joyful about speculating, hopefully responsibly, about predictions and more hopes for the second season.
A lot of hopes indeed. So some honorable mentions for me. I'll start here. I want the armor to return, one, but two, have another cool fight.
Right.
And there's been, look, I think a lot of people just love this character. Emily Swallow does a great job. Again, much like, you know, Mandalorian, no mask on, no face, just telling a whole story with that. And I've seen there's possibly, it looks like a Black Series 6-inch figure coming out or has been out. I've lost track of that, to be honest. Just saw some photos on the net, look great. I just love this character, and there's something cool about this character, something powerful. And that fight scene was great because I remember seeing that clip of what I learned later on. Oh, that's the armor. But going back to the trailer, going, she's that character's kneeling down. Stormtroopers are showing up. Probably doesn't go good for that character. So I had that in my head. Talk about predictions and why you don't want to hold on to them. And then when that scene happens and she pulls out her blacksmith tools or armor tools and just starts whacking stormtroopers across the face, I still love that sequence. It's just great. And so I'm not here just for pure violence in Star Wars, but for the armor, I am.
I am right there with you. The armor is one of my absolute highlights of season one. On one hand, a complex, interesting character, this small covert that's led by a matriarchal figure and a culture where the blacksmith is also the person with the greatest wisdom because that's what their culture is. All these deep ideas. And then also, she just looks cool, sounds cool, and it made me very happy when she just kicked people's ass in a cool way. So it's everything Star Wars, from the depth to, hit him with the thing.
Hit him with the thing. Mandalorian.
Hit him with the tongs. Tong beat down. I want another tong beat down.
Love it indeed. So that's one of my hopes. The other one here. So I saw a lot of people joke around, speculating. You know, we got Robert Rodriguez, Peyton Reed directing. We know we had the director cameos last year. Yes, I'd love to have them in it as well. But here's what I actually want. I really want Bryce Dallas Howard, who has returned to direct an episode. I really want her in an episode, maybe even more than a cameo. She's a great actor, and putting her in there with her presence, it would be a lot of fun. I hope that happens. And maybe she's part of the New Republic. Maybe every director has to cameo as some part of the New Republic, the off camera controlling body of the story. Right, that makes some sense. So anyway, that's one thing for me. I really hope is Bryce Dallas Howard in the show, not just behind the camera.
Yeah, she's in one of those two X-Wings we saw in the trailer. You heard it here first.
There you go. Say maybe if she gets to say lock S foils in attack position, that'd be great. So that's it. That's my big hopes. I know the Biker Scouts, it looks like Jason Sudeikis has tweeted out some stuff about revenge, and maybe that's the same character. Some kind of fun cameos. And there's a lot of rumored and confirmed actors showing up, but I'd love to, I was surprised, and I don't know if I missed the announcement, but I was surprised when, Amy Sedaris shows up, and, I'm a fan of her work, and used to love watching a lot of the sketch stuff she did in the 90s, particularly Strangers with Candy and all that kind of stuff. Something like that too, where I just, Brian Posehn, where you're like, oh, yeah, Brian's in Star Wars. It's great. I'd love to have more surprises like that too.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be such a philosophy of let's cast people who are known for other things and introduce them to the Star Wars world, that I'm sure that we will get more of those fun, surprising cameos or small roles or large roles in Amy Sedaris' case.
I would love, I've been watching that Favreau chef show with Roy Choi. Give me Roy Choi in Star Wars. Just have him cooking some Cubanos. That too.
Nice.
That's my honorable mentions. What are yours, sir?
Excellent. I'll keep mine short. Some quality time with Pedro Pascal's face. And this is another one of those just kind of a practical thing, but also a philosophic thing. Like, at any point, is that a tenet of the Mudhorn clan that you can take your helmet off with family? Or do we end up with a scene where he is, separated from the child, in which there's been some rumblings about, and he's, alone. And we, the audience, get to spend some time with him with the helmet off. I think that would be really interesting. I want to see it because I think Pedro Pascal is a great actor, and it's great to see his face. And I think it's just thematically really rich if it's done right, mm-hmm. which I think they're absolutely on board with doing right. There is, of course, the large rumor that Ahsoka Tano is going to show up. Mm-hmm. When I think about Ahsoka Tano and what I want from her presence, there's a ton of stuff going on. But if I'm just really honest to my nerdy heart, what would send chills up my spine is if Ahsoka Tano is in this and there's even a passing reference to her knowledge of Luke Skywalker, mm-hmm. just the power of her relationship with Anakin. If she's moving around the galaxy now, if she's a resource for somebody like Mando, who's like, I need to understand this Force stuff and this Jedi stuff. And somebody said, go to Ahsoka Tano. And she's like, well, there's other people that you've ever talked to. Have you heard the myth of Luke Skywalker? That would just be chill inducing to me. All the big talk about ideas and themes, there are still those moments for me that's just like, I am a giddy Star Wars fan, and that would make me giddy.
Giddy. Luke Skywalker, giddiness. They go together.
They do. Two other ones. I really liked in the first season, Chapter 7, Chapter 8, between them had that great cliffhanger. And to me, that is such a part of the DNA of Star Wars that's really being embraced by Mandalorian, is that serial adventure cliffhanger vibe. I know a lot of the episodes are going to be standalone. That'd be great. But I would love it if one or two of them had a cliffhanger, like an actual cliffhanger. We have to wait for a week to find out what happens next. I really like that sensation. I like what that does to us when we're as a community viewing something like this week to week. And to me, it harkens back to the absolute origins of Star Wars. So I would love to see a cliffhanger or two.
Oh, I'm bored for that. Tune in next week, same Mando time.
Exactly. And my final one is, since a lot of The Mandalorian is like, hey, let's look at something that is from the original trilogy that we probably had as a toy that people really didn't take seriously or think was that interesting. And let's look at it from a different direction. Let's create a little bit more respect for it. In that vein, I would love either the character Lobot or the vehicle, a cloud car, to show up. Even better if it's Lobot in a cloud car. Cloud car.
With a leftover cloud car pilot and the other one with a big orange helmet. Yes. I'm rooting for the Lobot, so we have a new generation of sad Lobot figures to just make your joke work that much more.
That's right. You know, absolutely. You know, New York Comic Con exclusive Black Series, you know, deluxe Lobot.
That'd be great. Oh, you got to have that. I mean, look, and I'm hopeful. This is now recording this post-trailer, and you had put this down pre-trailer. I have the email, friends, to confirm this if you need to. To see that one shot in the clouds, I mean, we're one step closer to cloud car.
I know, right? What if those cloud cars just emerge from the clouds? That's where they belong. They're among the clouds. So, I could go on and on, so I'm going to keep it to that. Those are my runner-ups.
Great. All right. Now we've reached our number one hopes for Mandalorian Season 2, and I'll go with my number one, so Joseph can close with his number one. All right. This one is not specific. It is a vague. It is this. It is, I want answers that lead to more questions. All right. The great Rowdy Roddy Piper once said famously in a promo or three in wrestling, just when they think they have all the answers, I change the questions. So we both have put things out there of getting a little bit more information, context, clarity, character showing up that give us, the state of the galaxy, the state of the empire, the state of the New Republic. There's a lot of things there that I would just plain and simply like answered. But I thought season one worked so well by just playing with wonder, playing with the spirit of what is going on, not dealing with bits of information that will come in time, and that definitely could be in this season, and I want some of it in this season. But I want this season to end. You mentioned the cliffhangers, stuff like that. I want this season to end for me just to be like, wow, I definitely have so many more questions. And the galaxy, just a time period that we're all kind of aware of, or, even though some of the canon details haven't been filled in, even in the novels, we've played around in this territory before, but just to be like, there's things I still don't even know and that I didn't know I wanted to know about what's going on in this era. Give me some of that. So forever, every answer, give me two more questions.
I think this is a great, great hope. And I think a very accurate prediction. I think that is the spirit of this. I think it does borrow from some of that energy of the original trilogy where, things are just mentioned and they give you clarity on the characters that in the moment that's important to the character, but then they just fire your imagination. Those of us who grew up with the original trilogy, like how many hours have we spent discussing and thinking about the bounty hunter they ran into on Ord Mantell, right? There's, in Legends that was answered multiple different times by multiple different people because that one line was so exciting. And The Mandalorian captures that mood so well to just suggest something. It suggests a thousand different adventures while also kind of being clear on the adventure that you're in at the moment. So I think that's a great prediction. The other thing that it made me think about is if we know that a third season is already being written, planned, all that.
Yeah.
If there are only three seasons, that makes me start to think, will the show The Mandalorian have the structure of a trilogy, right? The first season kind of works like that. It is the introduction to the main idea, the introduction to what's at stake. What is it going to mean to Din Djarin to be a Mandalorian? How do the ideas of Mandalorian, but the ideas of family merge together, this relationship with the child? And it ends on the way a first act often ends, with a victory and then racing off ready to face new challenges, which makes me think if it's going to follow that arc, that means the second season might be dark. Mm-hmm. It might end, the whole season might end on kind of a horrific cliffhanger or horrific question, but it also might end with some ideas that the Mando or the child or other main characters have some ideas about the world that they think is clear, and then something shatters them. Like, I'm not saying it's going to straight up be a, it's Empire Strikes Back and Mando's going to find out who his father is. I'm not saying that necessarily, but I think on a thematic level, I think there's a good chance that it gets to what you're talking about, where not only are we the audience left with these big dangling questions, but that there's an answer. There's some more information about the state of the galaxy, about the truth of who people are deep in their soul, that causes our main characters to really have doubt and really question themselves. And an answer that leads to more questions might be the final episode of season two if it follows that three-act structure.
Chapter eight, more questions.
Exactly. Chapter eight, but who am I really?
Yeah. So there you go. On one hand, yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Yeah, that's probably, it's good writing. That's good shows. That's good movies. That's what it does. But yeah, to your bigger point of a trilogy or building the next chapter. Yeah, I want to feel lost in a good way at the end of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel lost. I knew.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's really, really great. That's really exciting. And now I feel like I need to emotionally prepare myself for, I'm sure season two will be a satisfying meal all by itself, but having season two end and go, wait, how long do we have to wait?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's the worst, right? It's like, again, it's like ordering a good deli sandwich. Four bites in, you're halfway done and you know the journey's over. Oh, it's so sad. It's just me. That is my number two, answers that lead to more my number one, answers that lead to more questions. But now we've reached your number one hope for Mandalorian season two. Joseph, what do you got?
Yeah, my number one, I also considered changing, but no, after we saw the trailer, but this is my honest number one hope, and it is Mando and the Child's Adventure in a Jedi Temple. Now, this I came to this because I was really thinking about the mission of the second season. It ended up being really highlighted, really underlined in the trailer of, on the surface, really, the Mandalorian is just trying to be like, okay, he's some kind of comes from a race of sorcerers. And is that a philosophy? Is that a creed or is that a people? Yeah. I'm not clear. So I'll go try to find some of those answers. And from that, a lot of ideas emerge of like, oh, well, that would make sense if Ahsoka Tano pops up because that's somebody who could provide some of these answers. But then when I really thought about like the way the show has been in season one and the way it might be in season two, that this is not only a practical journey, but like a real emotional, philosophical journey for the Mandalorian. And it's like, what a great way to explore that if Mando and the child have to go to some place that we've seen a Jedi temple be like in Rebels, in the Clone Wars, in a Jedi Fallen Order, that they're all different. But they all really, Jedi temples seem to all kind of have some element of them that function a little mirror-like. They're a little like, you know, the only thing that's in there is what you bring in there with you. What a great way to make the Mandalorian, who's already facing some of these questions of like, who do I really want to be? What is my relationship with this child really? What do I really owe to him? Do I just want to drop him off or do I want to become a part of his family? To have something as mystical and weird and otherworldly as a Jedi temple, a new Jedi temple that these creators get to invent, and to have him have to face all those questions in this place that he doesn't understand, but maybe the child reacts to intuitively. We've already seen the child kind of reach into the dark side when he choked Cara Dune. Would a temple, you know, force him into seeing how powerful the child is and how dangerous the child is. All these really interesting ideas to me. And then when I think of not just the Mando going, hey, Ahsoka Tano, can you give me the Wikipedia entry of what a Jedi is and what's this guy's species? But instead, having to face on like an emotional level, oh, this is what the Jedi were. I know my people, the Mandalorians, fought with them. We considered them enemies at one point, but what is their deal? They go around the galaxy not being a race, but being a creed, and they have this philosophy of honor that they're trying to stick to, and they fail. And would he suddenly start to like not go, oh, the Jedi were right, but have a little bit more rhythm with understanding the trials of the Jedi and how that's going to impact him? So there's this super surface level. That'd be awesome. You know, it'd be awesome if they went to Ilum and they had that experience there. It'd be awesome if they went to a planet I've never heard of with a Jedi temple I've never imagined. But more than anything, it's because it gets down into these sort of deep roots of what's at stake with who the Jedi were, how that might connect with the idea of who Mandalorians are, who this Mandalorian wants to be, and what is the true power of the child.
Yeah, yeah. There's part of me that does want that second or two of walking into a temple and pulling something off the shelf and going, what's this? Oh, hey, cool. We got the answers. Again, going back to what I was just even talking about myself of answers leading to more questions. But what you're saying, to be able to use the Jedi, a Jedi temple or a Jedi sacred place or the history of the Jedi, the Force, something, it can't be ignored for too much longer in this show. It was really interesting how they used it in season one. And you and I talked on the breakdown of I want to know more beyond the every other Mandalorian in the galaxy knows their history of fighting the Jedi, except for this one kid. You know, he was adopted into it. Why him and the armor sound so confused. I don't say that as a joke. I say that as I really enjoyed that. Now, where do you take that? And being able to use that to show us really what the Jedi were, what the Jedi are thought of in this time. We are on the way to them becoming myths again right now in this time period. So yeah, to be able to not just say, cool, Jedi Temple, Kyber Crystal, but that, as you said, a mirror looking back at the Mandalorian and the galaxy at large and what the child could be or could not be. So yeah, that'd be great. And I, you know what, and here's the thing, I'll explicitly state it. This is something that I would absolutely trust Filoni and his influence on. He's used it very well in Rebels, or his team. We say Filoni, every time we say Filoni, I never want to take credit for the other, the great producers and writers that work with him. But, you know, I get it. He's on the headlines there. But, you know, it's been used so well. Clone Wars too, but Rebels, they used it just extremely well.
Yeah.
The spiritual, emotional stuff.
And I think maybe that's what's so exciting to me too, that obviously Favreau has such an original trilogy guy perspective. And what is his relationship with the Jedi at this point, when he was a guy who grew up thinking that they're, you know, really noble and a little bit more nomadic. They just travel around the galaxy and find people. And like, if he still has that in his heart, if that's who the Jedi were, and then Filoni has a greater understanding of, you know, all of their story through their prequels and so much great experience of the Jedi Temple. You combine those different ideas about Jedi. What do those two people kind of ultimately create together? And does that start to just open up lots of new and fun and interesting ideas about the Jedi all through the eyes of our main character, Mandalorian, and the big, cute eyes of the child?
Yeah, for lack of just, you know, nuance on the long list of writers and producers on this show, just for Filoni to bring some of that nuance to John bringing just the feel. I think he's really good with that. And sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I tease both these guys on air, you know what I mean? But I love their work. And I am a fan of Favreau, man. I watch that chef show because he's just engaging and charming and can just carry on conversations with the dude shucking clams and a celebrity chef and do it equal as well. So and he has somewhat of an approach I think I would have of just like, man, yeah, I loved Star Wars as a kid because of the pew, 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 and because of the sabers and everything. I do want to dig deeper because I tell stories and I know how to find themes in a Cubano sandwich being made, you know? so yeah, the combination too, in this kind of setting, if that's what we're going to, and now that we have seen that trailer shot, the walking into Ilum, not Ilum, Hoth 7 or whatever it is, what do we call it? Snowy Town 12. That has every kind of feel and look of kind of what you're describing. And that would excite me.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my number one. The Mando and the child have a really exciting day in a Jedi temple.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want that exposition, just wait for Moff Gideon to come around and say, the Jedi were an ancient order of religious warriors. Let me explain it there.
Their utility belts contained aqua breathers for underwater necessities.
You were wearing the common robe worn by a Jedi to make it seem they were like they were moisture farmers. It'd be great. We joke. We love Moff Gideon, too. Well, there you go. Joseph and I have listed our hopes, dreams, and predictions for Mandalorian Season 2. We'll know soon enough. And who knows, more marketing, even maybe another trailer will slip in there, an exclusive photo shoot in a pop culture magazine, and we'll get more answers, too, along the way. We just are excited for new Star Wars and the possibilities contained within. So that is what we have this week. As always, you can follow the podcast at on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use hashtag Star Wars Rank to join this conversation. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast, like our Instagram page as well, or follow us there. We're on YouTube as well. More content on there. And look, let me address something. I get it. I've seen some of the comments. This is one that goes up my craw a little bit. If you will allow me, Joseph, Star Wars Ranked is the show I mostly lead here. I apologize if I say something that you don't agree with. We are putting more content on YouTube. We got the In Memoriam up. We are dropping the news things. A lot of it is rebroadcast versions for podcasts. Star Wars Show and Tell is video, and more content will be up on YouTube that does have our faces on it. As of right now, I have a strong belief that podcasts done on camera are not as effectual as I want them to be and as Joseph wants them to be, not just because I'm an old radio guy, just the way we approach it, the quality of our conversations. We get a lot of questions that are really well-meaning of, can you just do video? We will in some other way inform these shows right now, not. So just want to address that because I saw some comments this week. I want to be nice, want to be supportive because you wanting more of us is not a bad thing, but these shows will remain like this for a while there. So, but we're on YouTube. If you'd like, go over there, subscribe, rate, and review. As always, if you want to support the show, you can do so by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Get a free audio book and support the show as well. We got merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us at Patreon at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ked Knapsack. Go to kednapsack.com. And Joseph, they can go to your website for information on your life.
That is exactly right. For information, what did he eat today? Find out on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for my other comedy podcast, Obsessed, and lots of comedy albums, and a link to the Adult Swim show I work on, Tigtone, all on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. And Ken, I do just want to affirm that I agree with you. I super, super appreciate, and honestly, am a little shocked to live in a world where somebody is requesting to see my face. I really, really appreciate that. And I think for me, there is moving to video just because of the way our lives are set up, the way our tech is set up. It's not just a switch a button. And I know it is for some people. And so I can see them from the outside. Why can't they just turn the cameras on? And I think for me, there's, you know, some technical stuff to put a bunch of time into. And then there is just some kind of like mood and energy. You know, I don't want to always be looking into a camera. I want to be looking into your eyes or watching your waveforms on the computer and interacting with you, Ken, when we talk. And, you know, I think for myself, I can sometimes just be a little bit of a slow mover because I really like to think about things, analyze things. And I think that's kind of the way we both are in some ways, good, bad, or otherwise. That's just kind of who we are and how we operate.
Yeah, it doesn't mean to say that we won't have some quick hits along the way, all those kind of things. We totally get it. And again, appreciate it. I've just seen some of the comments that are a little bit of like, come on, guys, there's a reason why. And also just a belief. I think if you're on, this is a weird discussion and a positive show on, if you're on camera, you're not doing an audio pod. You're not doing an audio show, and it changes the intention, changes the quality of the conversation. Doesn't mean it's a bad quality. It's different and not what we're trying for here. And rant. Ken's been ranting a lot in 2020. He's going to stop. All right. Mandalorian Season 2. Come save us on October 30th. All right. That's it. Star Wars has been ranked.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.